This is Real Talk, the Customer Insight Show with Jen Mancusi, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen to us on all major podcast channels and watch on dbtv.tv. Join Jen and her guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by Vox PopMe, the leader in video research for over a decade. Here's today's conversation.
Hello, insights professionals, marketers, and everyone who wants to understand their customers better. I'm your host, Jen Mancusi. Data quality issues distract us from truly understanding what matters: our customers, consumers, the people that we care about the most. The data quality problem is a huge one in our industry. We've been talking about it for a long time, and it is worth fixing. So today I'm joined by Vignesh Krishnan, CEO of Research Defender, to talk about the topic. Welcome to the show, Vignesh.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jen.
Really excited to have you on here. I think, you know, the work that you guys have been doing to combat the data quality problems are really, really important. And as I mentioned in the intro, like, something we've been talking about for a long time and no one's really found a solution for. So really excited to dive in today on this.
Yeah, it is a big problem, like you said. Whether we like it or not, we do attract a lot of fraud in this space. In one way, you could look at it positively and say that, hey, you know what, it's a good thing because there's a lot of value, there's a lot of money here, and people want to try and defraud us when there is a lot of money. So I guess we can take privilege from the fact that we have to solve the problem, but we do have to solve the problem. So that's the other side of the coin.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to get into it today. I'm very excited. To get us started for this conversation, maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself and your career so far.
Yeah, sure. So I've been in the market research industry since 2010. I live in New Orleans, and I used to work for a company here called Lucid, which is now, of course, part of the Cint Group. So I had the good fortune, I guess, of working on all sides of the industry. So I've been a project manager. I've run surveys mainly on the quant side, but I've also helped on the qual side as well. I've helped develop the product from a product development and a software perspective. Before I came to the industry, I did have software background, and as such, I was able to, you know, sort of look at some of the problems that we have and, you know, propose engineering solutions to it. So I've been doing this for about 12 years, like I mentioned, and Research Defender was started about 5 years ago. And again, I started the company because there was a lot of problems, like you were saying, and there wasn't really any, in my opinion, dynamic and fast-moving solutions, right? And this is a bit of an arms race. So the company is about 5 years old, and like you said, we strive to solve the problem, or more precisely, control the problem. Because with fraud, I think it's more important to control it. You can't really stop it, just like you quote unquote cannot stop crime. The question is, how do you control it? How do you make sure that it doesn't affect the larger ecosystem?
For sure. So, is this a problem that you identified through the work that you were doing earlier and kind of working hands-on with surveys and the product and the software that you saw this fraud coming in? Or like, what, like, when did the idea sort of spark for you that this was something that was a, you know, not just a problem we needed to solve, but a business that needed to be established?
Yeah, sure. So I would say that the genesis was the dynamism of quantitative surveys. Okay. So quantitative surveys has now basically become a part of a very dynamic software bidding process. You have demand that is placed onto the large buyers of data. These buyers are making sure that they put the right price settings in, they make sure that they have the right target set in, and so on and so forth, to ensure that sample on the supply side is being bought. So you basically have a demand side that connects with a supply side. And when that process comes through, the way the technology worked 15 years ago was a fairly manual process. You basically had a bidding system. It was all manual or via email. It took days, if not weeks, to get, you know, a survey going, versus all of that is highly dynamic today. And in a more dynamic ecosystem, you have a far more you know, area and scope for fraud, because it's dynamic. There's nobody like manning the, you know, the door basically. And it's a very systematic process. And like you said, Jen, like part of the early experience that I had working at an exchange was to see the dynamic process come through and evolve. And our goal was then to say, you know what, there probably needs a more dynamic solution for a dynamic problem. So there is a matter of timing. You always talk about, you know, companies and markets and customers and so on and so forth, talking about timing. And this is where such a dynamic system probably would not have succeeded or was not needed more precisely 10, 15 years ago, because the underlying bidding system was not dynamic either, right? So it's almost a, it's a outcome of the situation and the situation being evolving over the last, you know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The automation of those systems just creates more opportunity for people to come in and, you know, break in the gaps. So why do you think that there's such a big data quality problem today? I mean, you did touch on, you know, that there's money here industry. Yeah. Maybe that's a positive, but what else? Like, why is there a, why is that a problem right now?
Yeah. So as always, you know, money is the root cause of the fraud, right? I don't think there are people who defraud, you know, surveys and then give away their earnings to nonprofits, right? Like there's definitely, you know, they keep it for themselves. But that being said, going a little bit deeper, I would say that the majority of the fraud that we do see is international fraud, right? So mostly people are trying to use VPNs. They're trying to use, you know, their hide behind proxy servers. And if you think about it, on the quantitative side for Gen Pop surveys or, you know, let's say B2C surveys, the payouts are in the order of single dollar, you know, single digit dollars, right? So it's, you know, $1, $2, $3, maybe $5, you know, stuff like that, depending on the length of the interview and so on and so forth. So for the most part, I think in the US, people can earn that and much more through other means, right? So I wouldn't say that surveys would be the primary form of, you know, of taking surveys, unless, you know, for some reason you're cooped up at home and you can't go outside for some physical reason or something. So as such, just to add some more color to the answer, Jen, I would say that most of the fraud that comes in comes from places where the $1, $2, $3 actually goes a long way. And if people can earn that amount multiple times per hour, you're talking about, you know, several dozen, if not hundreds of dollars a day, right? And that point, it starts to add up. And if you are in a country where the, you know, the local currency is comparatively weaker, that gives you more purchasing power. And then, you know, you figure out that, hey, you know what, I don't need to go out and work, I can just do this, right? So that would be one specific type of fraud. And then, of course, we've always heard of the preferential survey takers. You know, they take different, you know, forms in many different companies. So in some cases, they are actually going after the quant surveys. They are trying to make that $3, $8, $10, you know, every few hours. And let's say they do that three, four times, they can get, you know, $40, $50, maybe $80 a day. That, you know, adds up. Or in some cases, they're actually going after the product, right? So in home user testing, like I've heard that there's fraud even on the qual side in a physical format of survey taking, where they are doing that to get the stuff, right? Whether it's cigarettes, whether it's, you know, soaps, you know, so on and so forth. So it does come down to money. But then once you take that away, then you have different kinds of fraud, right? It's international, there's in-home user testing, there are people who come in to take the snacks, right? So there's all sorts of creative stuff that you kind of get into.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then, you know, even as you're kind of doing the math and saying, oh, you do this a few times a day, and this might be this amount of money, I've, you know, I know there was some research that was done and some information that was released earlier or at the end of last year about people who are kind of doing this now 25 times, right? Yeah. And going in the like a single person has 25 different things going at once. Yes. And that really does start to add up and creates a pretty lucrative operation for some people.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. And in fact, the numbers do add up, you know, so like I said, it depends on your mindset and how, you know, one want to take it. But if you decide to do this, there's a lot of money there. If I'm not wrong, the entire industry is about $90 billion, right? As you can imagine. And that includes everything, of course. That includes advertising, that includes, you know, advertising research, you know, in-home user testing and all of those things. But even if you just focus on the online quant piece, that's still in the, you know, single digit billions even, which is still, you know, not small. So yes, you know, the numbers definitely add up, and that's the primary goal for some of these folks. So.
Yeah, for sure. And so what are then some of the problems that arise from these kind of fraudulent responses going into the surveys?
I mean, look, there are some real bad stories on the, let me start with the easier and the smaller problems, which is there's a lot of frustration in terms of the data cleaning. There's a lot of frustration in terms of having to refill the surveys. So let's say that you run a survey, you have the 2000, you know, open ends or whatever it is that you're looking for, and then you stop the survey, you know, it takes, let's say, a week, 2 weeks to run. Then you open up the survey and look, you know, 30% of the answers are just, you know, don't make any sense, right? If you're lucky, they'll be garbage and you can just throw them out. If you're unlucky, you're going to be skewing the data in one way or the other, right? So on one hand, it costs a lot of trust. It costs a lot of data quality. It or rather time around refilling the surveys, and it basically just creates a lot of logistical problems on the simple side. Okay, and on the complex and a bit, you know, potentially down the stream, you know, again without basically taking client names or brand names, some of them have openly said that, hey, we made the wrong decision based on this, the survey that we got, right? Or the samples that were collected. And these are multi-million dollar problems. Then you get the severe, severe problems where election outcomes can change, right? Like, so you don't expect, you know, certain ways to be polling in a certain way because you get the data and the data is wrong, or, you know, someone pushed the data one way or the other. And usually, again, the fraud can, it doesn't have to be intentful. Like, even if it's just wrong, it can change it. And you're making, again, multi-million dollar decisions on where to campaign, for example, right? So there are pretty severe real life outcomes that can happen and have happened, right? I don't think, you know, anything that I'd be saying right now is surprising anybody because we know what has happened in the past many years. But on the other hand, you know, just the logistic and the day-to-day gets really, really hard as well if you have a lot of fraud, because there's refilling, there's budgets that have to be changed. And, you know, then you have the fact that, you know, there's just friction in the system. And none of those things are good things.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, the time and the money just to rerun this stuff, or, you know, to have to clean everything out or choose a new methodology potentially, correct, depending on what you're finding. And then I think too, like another thing to add to that is, you know, insights folks are having a hard enough time getting their findings across. If there's ever any doubt in the results, like that's another big problem that they're going to have to face the next time they're running research, or the next time they're delivering a finding to someone internally, when there's any sort of doubt in the validity of the data.
Correct. Yeah. I think I touched upon some of the practical aspects, but you're right. Like, probably the more powerful issues are the trust and the software aspect, right? So, so if you lose the trust, then you could legitimately, I mean, like, you could have a senior, you know, the chief marketing officer or market research, you know, head who basically says, hey, why do we need to do this at all, right? Like, if this happened and we spent 6 weeks on this, why do we need to do this at all, right? And that's, like you said, you know, like you just suggested, it's probably a bigger problem because that's a future question that undermines future projects, versus on a day-to-day basis, you know, you could lose one project, which is, on the large scheme of things, not the worst, but, you know, the future outcomes are far more you know, valuable in aggregate. So
For sure. How do you, in your experience, how often do you think, you know, you describe the sort of multi-million dollar mistakes that you make as a result of relying on fraudulent data potentially, and that is a huge problem. Like, how often do you think companies are even aware that they've, you know, made a decision based on fraudulent data? Do you think that companies have like a good eye on this today?
Yeah. So I'll tell you what. So this one, I'm going to go positive, right? Because I actually trust the industry, and you know, we've been fortunate to see some really good people and hard work being done. So I would say that compared to other industries, for example, like crypto is a great one because it's always in the news. And when something bad happens, it happens in the order of tens of millions of dollars, or hundreds of millions of dollars, right? Another good example is ad tech. So for example, if a brand, a large brand, a sporting brand, for example, is spending $1-3 million of ad spend, in many cases, especially on the web, you could have regenerative scripts that pretend to be eyeballs and watch 30% of the spend of the ad. So you basically 30% of, let's say, $1 million, $2 million is gone, right? Mm. Versus in market research, in my opinion, because we know that there is a problem and it's a fairly deterministic industry. So for example, what I mean when I say deterministic is that we are looking at every row of every survey to look at what the respondents said, right? So that is deterministic versus probabilistically, you know, when, again, a large, you know, sporting brand, let's say Nike, Adidas, they look, okay, 30% of the people did not like this ad and 60% liked it, but they didn't like this particular segment and so on and so forth. And I think it's easier for fraud to live in those spaces because people are looking at the data in aggregate and probabilistically versus we're doing it deterministically. And I can tell you that, you know, in working with agencies and with working with the market research divisions of brands, the frustration comes when there's a lot of manual work to do some of those things we talked about earlier, which is refielding the survey or, you know, spending hours and hours and hours like reading every single response, right? And making sure you're taking the right response off. So in my opinion, I think we do a good job of a lot of heavy lifting and frustrating work to protect our end clients that other industries don't do. So I will leave us or at least share that particular thought on a positive note. But that being said, none of it is good, right? You don't want this to be coming in the first place, right? And that's kind of our job as well to try and protect that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And to your point, like it does take so much resource to be looking at it in that way. So much time, so much energy to read all the responses or to, yes, you know, whatever the tactic might be to identify the fraud. So that can be a big challenge as well.
Yeah, that is a big challenge, and we don't want that, right? Like we in a world in 2023 when, you know, we can automate so many of the things that we can, it is a shame that a researcher or anybody or, you know, like a project manager or someone who's fielding the survey should be spending hours and hours. And by the way, I have heard several dozen hours a week, right? So 24, 36, you know, 40, how many hours per week being spent just on reading? And that is in addition to the actual job of executing the survey and then, you know, delivering the results. So there's much more that we can and should be doing. But at the same time, I think we do have a good heart in this industry where before delivery to the client, we have the capacity to understand what we are putting in front of the client and protect them a little bit. So I would say that things could be much worse, but we're throwing man hours at the problem presently, and that has to be, you know, be avoided.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in a world where like everything's getting automated,
yeah.
Right? This is an area for sure where there's a huge opportunity. So how should companies identify this problem, you know, whether that's on an individual survey basis, mm-hmm, or just as a whole?
Yeah. So look, I think having conversations, I think, is really important because, first of all, you can't fix something that you cannot identify, right? So we have to understand that ultimately, we are seeing this problem, and how are we seeing it? Are we seeing it because there's a lot of international fraud that's coming in via proxies and VPNs? Are we seeing this because, you know, there's a lot of duplication that's happening? And are we seeing this because, hey, guess what? The budget is X, and, you know, for that budget, you can only get so many people. So I think understanding what the bigger source of the problem is important, right? So in that example, you had international fraud, you had budget issues, you had duplication issues, all of which you know, feed into this. So as long as we understand what the problem is, the next step is to go and, you know, how do we solve the problem, right? So one example is how we're doing it today, which is not very efficient, which is, hey, we're going to read every single answer, and we're going to try and make sure that, you know, we weed out the bad answers, refill the surveys, so on and so forth. But you can also, you know, you have software tools, right? And you have inbuilt tools, you have third-party tools, you have tools within the survey tools. And ultimately, I think it is up to the partner and the research company or the you know, the brand that's doing the research to ensure that you're following certain consistent longitudinal rules to make sure that the problem is either being tracked or getting better, right? And if it's getting worse, what are you doing to make it get better, right? This is a full-time job, I can tell you. And I don't mean for ourselves, but for anyone who's participating in this, just like when you go to a bank, that the banks, it's part of the bank's full-time job to not just maintain your deposits and answer your questions and make sure the wires are happening. It is also part of the full-time job of the bank to be fighting against fraud, right? And any company that is doing market research has to understand that this is part of the job, right? It is not something that can just be like, just go away, right? And I think if you, we can look at examples, I think I brought the banking industry as an example. You can use other, you know, like I said, the crypto is another great example always, or whether it's a retail store as well, right? They are always on the lookout, cameras, you know, machines that kind of, you know, go off when you walk out without paying, so on and so forth. So we just have to consider that this is part of the job. It's a very important part of the job, and we need to make the right investments, whether it's manually, whether it's through product, whether it's through relationships, whatever it is. So I would say that probably the one thing that surprises me still is that everybody gets surprised when they see so much fraud, and I don't think we should be anymore.
Yeah. Something you just said, it just clicked for me. I don't know if this is a problem for me to say this on air, but I'm going to say it anyways. But a few weeks ago, I had a just personal story. Somebody filed for unemployment under my information, right? And I found it really interesting that the Department of Labor, like when you go on their website in my state, you've got like two options. You can like file for unemployment or you can file a fraud claim.
Yeah, exactly.
So front and center. And just what you just said about the job is to more broadly, not just make sure that they're getting everybody their unemployment benefits, but also make sure that fraud is not happening. And like finally clicked for me when you just said that, like that is the job of these institutions, whatever they might be, to be like serving the customer and also making sure they're not enabling fraud.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's a good example, right? SSN, in fact, I think it's happened to some of my colleagues as well. So that it is very much part of anyone's job to also mitigate and fight fraud. Now, I will say that in the research industry, the defense would be that, hey, you know, as recently as 10 years ago or 9 years ago, many people were actually getting checks to their house, to the address, which they had to go and cash to get the money. In fact, I've done it as well. I mean, I've been done for a while. And to be honest with you, the check sizes are, you know, $5, $10, right? So you don't want to be running to the bank every day for that. So I would say that you are correct that every industry or entity, including the SSN office in your state, is partly fighting fraud, and they should be doing that. And in research, it has now come to the case where we need to be doing this, right? Because 5-10 years ago, you didn't, because guess what? You got a check in the mail. There's almost no chance of someone defrauding you to the address level and then cashing it from there, right? That's probably very, very hard. And like we discussed before, we have far moved away from the physical and the digital aspects. We are now, or rather, we are far moved towards the physical and the digital aspects. And we're not, you know, dealing with physical checks anymore. So,
yeah, for sure. Now, you mentioned just a moment ago about putting in place consistent longitudinal rules. Can you dig into that a little bit deeper? What do you mean by that? And how can companies implement them?
So I think one thing to note here is that the hardest thing with fraud is intent. Okay. So if someone is acting in certain ways, how do we first define what that means? And what do we mean by that person is acting odd, right? Because if, for example, VPNs are the easiest example, and I always, you know, use them. If I'm behind a VPN, there could be very good reason for me to do that, because, you know, I still work with our, you know, software developers and programmers. And so sometimes I do use the VPN and then I stop using the VPN. Okay. And however, if you look at international fraud or you know, there people are sitting behind VPNs and proxies, and these are good ways to target it. The question is now, are you going to trust that person or not? Right? Because on one hand, I can give you a very good reason why you should trust the person in that, hey, you know, work from home is more prevalent these days. You know, if you want to run a study with programmers, guess what? You're going to have a higher, you know, percentage of VPNs come through. But on the other hand, it is one of the most commonly used, you know, methods to hide your origination, right? So now what do we do? Now, how can you guess what is behind what that person is thinking, right? So one way to do it is to combine it with other stuff. So you can ask, hey, are you using a VPN, right? If they say no, and you know that they are, then you can terminate that person. So these are just some very simple examples of longitudinal things wherein you can track that over time. So you can just simply track VPN usage over time, or you can track proxy usage over surveys. So for example, if my survey is paying out $30, do I tend to see more fraud or proxies coming towards that? And if it does, you know that obviously there's something weird going on there, right? So those are just some examples of ways to track fraud, or rather, like, you know, longitudinally see how things are evolving. And as the saying goes, I know it's a cliche, but you can't really improve what you don't measure, right? So if you don't measure something, you don't know how much duplicates you have, you don't know how much fraud you have, and all you're doing every day is cleaning out the data, you really don't know whether it's getting worse or bad. It may feel worse, and it probably feels worse because, you know, you're spending so much time, you know, cleaning out that data in the first place. But what are the rates of rejection? For example, in 2023, in January, did I throw out on average 10 to 15%? And now I'm throwing out 30%? Or is it 16%, right? Or is it even maybe 14%? It's going the other way. And having metrics, I think, is really important. We can't only track, like, you know, you said, positive metrics. When you log into the SSN office, they ask, okay, do you want to, you know, get something for an employment benefit? Or are you trying to prevent a fraud claim, right? It is such a big topic that it's front and center. And if we don't measure it, I think that's bad. And I bet that, for example, in that SSN office, they know how many fraud claims are going up and down. And is it moving the economy, for example, right? Like, when the economy goes down, you probably tend to see a little bit more of that because people, you know, are trying to collect more checks via the SSN office versus the economy. So there's a lot of elements there, but you can improve what you can measure, right? I think I'll share that cliche again because it's very true.
Yeah, that's so important. I think it, like, it's kind of a no-brainer in maybe some other areas of business and just managing, you know, the day-to-day work that people are doing. But in terms of fraud, it's another one to consider to make sure you're measuring any improvements or declines in certain metrics. Yeah. What are some of the ways that people can identify the cause of those changes? You know, if let's say duplicate rates are going up and it rings an alarm bell, like what should someone do at that point?
Yeah, so look, incidentally, it's a good question to ask because it also goes back to what our industry is, which is a research industry, right? So when you have a certain trend going a certain way, the best thing to do is to cut that trend by different dimensions, right? So for example, are you looking at B2B surveys? And that's where the duplication is going up, because ultimately, look, whether we like it or not, not many people respond to surveys. And when they do, many of them are not necessarily part of the B2B group, right? For example, on a Monday morning, we're having a, you know, podcast, you know, I had meetings earlier, and I'm sure you do as well. And to try and engage someone at that time for a B2B survey is going to be a lower probability, right? So I think you need to look at, you know, data by the cuts, right? Whether it's by B2B surveys, whether it's regional, right? So for example, like, you know, again, another simple example is if you see a spike of traffic coming in from a region which is, you know, basically in the nighttime hours, then you likely can put your finger that, hey, you know, there is some fraudulent activity coming there, because, you know, usually we get, let's say, 10,000, 100,000 respondents, and now we're getting like 40,000 or 400,000 respondents. That's another signal of fraud. So I think ultimately fraud does come down to signals, but also sharing with your supply chain and your buyer chain what signals you will track and be, you know, fighting against, right? So and in software, we often say that it many times is better to be consistent than it is to be right, because as long as you're consistent, your partners can react to that consistency, and your, you know, whether it's the employees, whether it's the clients, whether it's, you know, the process itself can be predictable. And if you deviate from that predictability survey to survey, then you're going to have bad results, because not only do you have a problem, you're also having a variability in your behavior towards that problem. Mm-hmm. So very simply put, you know, agree, let's all agree that, you know what, we do not want VPNs into the surveys, for example, right? Or maybe we are going to accept VPNs, but we're going to use them to, you know, just tag them and flag them in the surveys, and we're not going to outright reject them. And that's what we're going to do. And I think as long as we have those variables in play, be consistent, of course, tweak them over time, but have good reasons to tweak them, but, and also correlate how much fraud is coming. So for example, I rejected 15% of my traffic and 14% was flagged for being on a VPN, right? So then you can make a decision, right? Versus if, you know what, I threw out 15% of my traffic and only 3% had come in the night, right? So in that case, the correlation is a little softer, right? If that makes sense. And I'll give you one last example though, in that same topic, which is, for example, like Netflix. If you try to use a VPN and say that you're in Italy or India, for example, versus trying to access it like a US program, it'll tell you that we notice that you're on a VPN and unfortunately, you know, you're not allowed to access our, you know, software, right? And I think those things, I've not seen that happen as much in market research yet, but that might be, you know, a good suggestion to go down as well. So.
Yeah. A lot of good ideas there, but I think what you said about it's just important to be consistent, do the same thing each time.
Yeah.
And of course, things are always changing, right? So six months down the road, you might make an informed decision to change the process at that point, but ultimately to stick with it and not just be kind of treating every survey individually. That's a really good tip. Yeah. And I mean, in terms of like long-term solutions to these problems, like what's your position on that? Because obviously, as we get more sophisticated in mitigating fraud gets more sophisticated. So, you know, is it just that kind of ongoing paying attention to the right metrics, or, you know, what do you recommend for sort of, you know, keeping your data as clean as possible for the long term?
Yeah, I mean, look, it is a bit of an arms race, I think, unfortunately. So that's going to be there. And nobody's ever going to stop trying to rob banks. Nobody's ever going to stop trying to, you know, steal crypto. And unfortunately, nobody's ever going to stop trying to, you know, fabricate market research data, right? So I think that is something that we have to understand and live with. I think what we should try and do is to make it more and more expensive for people to defraud, right? So there's a lot of ideas that I think some panel companies, for example, they delay payments, right? They, you know, or they delay payments to initial joinees so that they understand their behavior. So that's another kind of idea, because I'll tell you, fraudsters and basically these thieves, essentially, they like two things. They like money and they like to get paid fast, right? So if you press the lever on either one of those things, they'll basically just go away. It'll take them longer to cheat. So you may have people who are extremely patient and extremely, you know, long-term oriented, but those become farther and fewer away. So earlier we had talked about trying to control and mitigate fraud as opposed to block fraud. Just like, you know, we can't block fraudulent attempts, or, you know, crime is always a good analogy here. You have to try and mitigate it and reduce it and make sure that when it does happen, it is fairly limited and you have quick control over it. And it's distributed so that it's not, you know, it doesn't erupt, for example. And so I would say that there's a lot of levers to pull, but try and make it more expensive for these fraudsters. Try to make it that they have to be sticking around for a longer time, right? And when they stick around for a longer time, you can see more bad behaviors and you can, you know, see flags and so on and so forth. So there's definitely some game theory involved, I would say. Definitely don't tell them that, hey, we're not engaging with you because we found out that you're a fraudster. Do not tell them that, because, you know, guess what? They'll figure out why you said that and try to get around that as well. So there is some game theory involved. Try to make it longer, harder, more expensive for them to participate in this industry. I think as a whole, I think that's what we should be striving for.
That's great. Thank you so much. Those are really great tips. And I hope everybody out there is, you know, paying attention to this stuff, because I think, you know, just as we were talking in the beginning, when something requires a lot of time and resource to pay attention to make sure it's right, it's an easy one to say, oh, we're just not going to look at that right now. Yeah. Right. And so it's so important that we pay attention and putting those blocks in place to make sure that the quality of the data is as accurate as possible to make those important multi-million dollar decisions, it's critical. So thanks for all the tips that you shared today. I think that's really tactical and step-by-step that people can follow.
Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today. We will be back next week with another episode. I'll be speaking with Stephen Snell of Goldman Sachs. We'll see you then.